Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. This rip is brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. The hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Doing well, and as a country, if the Fed would ever lower rates, you know, would buy debt for a lot less. It's a shame. This guy, I have a guy. Do you ever have a guy that's not a smart person, and you're dealing with him, and you have to deal? He's not a smart guy. He's worried about inflation. I said, that's right. If there's inflation in 6 months or 9 months, you lower the rates, or you raise the rates. You can do whatever you want, Brian, right? So let's say there's rampant inflation, which there's none. You know what? There is a success. I got a call from Congress last night. Sir, there's a problem. I said, what is it? Money is pouring in. We don't know how to account for it. I said, check the tariffs. $88 billion came in from tariffs. No inflation. And it's going to get even more so. I know what I'm doing. So we have a stupid person, frankly, at the Fed. He probably won't cut today. Europe had 10 cuts, and we had none. And I guess he's a political guy. I don't know. He's a political guy who's not a smart person, but he's costing the country a fortune. So what I'm going to do is, he gets out in about 9 months. He gets fortunately terminated. Biden, I would have never reappointed him. Biden reappointed him. I don't know why that is, but I guess maybe he was a Democrat. You know, I got great advice from Mnuchin on this one. Great advice. But he's done a poor job. So we have no inflation. We have only success. And I'd like to see interest rates get down. Now, Biden did a lot of very short-term debt. So we have short-term debt coming due. And because of this guy's rates, you know, if he'd lowered a point, I'd pay about a point less. Then if he'd lowered 2 points, I'd pay about 2 points less. And that's for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, 5 years. It's hundreds of billions. It's even trillions of dollars that we're going to lose because of this too late. I call him too late Powell because he's always too late. I mean, if you look at him, every time I did this, I was right 100%. He was wrong. Maybe I should go to the Fed. Am I allowed to appoint myself, Doug? I don't know. Am I allowed to appoint myself at the Fed? I do a much better job than these people. So anyway, we should be 2 points lower. It'd be nice to be 2.5 points lower. We'd be saving $800 billion, $700 billion. That's a lot of money. Thank you. For nothing. For absolutely nothing. We'd save $600, $700, $800 billion We have, I think we're 38th now in interest, and we should be number one. We should be the lowest. But, and by the way, if he's worried about inflation, that's okay. I understand that. I don't think there's going to be any. So far, there hasn't. I mean, we have almost no inflation. We've done a great job. We had, when I came in, we had a lot of inflation. We went through 4 years of the highest inflation in the history of our country with Sleepy Joe Biden. And Sleepy Joe. And he didn't know what the hell he was doing. And so we had the highest inflation we've ever had in the history of our country. And then it came down because when I got elected, it started dropping because people understood that I knew what I was doing. But now we have a man that just refuses to lower the Fed rate, just refuses to do. And he's not a smart person. I don't even think he's that political. I think he hates me, but that's okay. You know, he should. I call him every name in the book, trying to get him to do something. I've been nice to him. I do it always. I don't know how to sell. I've been so nice to him, fellas, you wouldn't believe. Let's have dinner. Too late. I call him too late. Come on, too late. Let's have dinner. I do it every way in the book. I'm nasty. I'm nice. Nothing works. He's like just a stupid person. But I don't expect anything. Maybe he does a little bit, but we should be 2.5 points. Remember, Europe had 10 cuts. We had none. We're paying more rate, more interest than a lot of European nations that can't carry our suitcase. I'm going to be nice. There's another expression. You know what the other expression, can't carry your, you know what, but I shouldn't use it in front of the fake news. So it's very sad to see it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go very short term, like 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, wait till this guy gets out, get the rates way down, and then go long term. Because we have a tremendous appetite for our debt. Because our country is doing well. But think of it, I got a call from Congress 3 nights ago. Sir, we can't account for the money coming in. I said, that's a good problem. You know, the bad problem is we don't have any money. They can't account. There's so much more money than we thought is coming into the Treasury. We don't know where it's coming from, sir. I said, check out the tariffs. He calls back about a day later. Wow. I think you were right. Yeah, I was right. That's nothing. You haven't seen anything yet. More importantly than the money coming in, we have factories being built, AI, auto factories. Two of them stopped yesterday in Mexico, you read. And they're coming here because they don't want to pay the tariffs. They can't pay the tariffs. Does it work? So I just...
Are those construction workers behind them?
Yeah, imagine being those guys.
He's like turning to them like they understand interest rate policy. Yeah, which maybe they do.
He was there for a photo op, and then he started doing Q&A.
Yeah. The Trump battering of Jerome Powell continues. It started probably about this time last year. He was begging for rates to come down.
Marty hadn't watched that video, so I suggested we do it as a cold open and have him watch it live. So, Marty.
Yeah.
Your response.
I see the points he's making. I wrote a newsletter about this last night, as you alluded to before we hit record. But I just question, because inflation's still a little high. I believe the last print came in at 3.1. The Fed has moved its target to 3%, so it's right around there. But as he was saying, too late, pal. I think that is true historically of the Federal Reserve. They typically move like late, if you will, when a crisis has already materialized. And maybe this is Trump trying to say, hey, if you don't lower rates, there's going to be some sort of liquidity crisis. But it doesn't seem like things are as bad as they would need to be for Powell to lower rates. And that was my point last night. I sent a tweet and a note out like, hey, like why I understand everybody wants lower rates so things can rip, like, but doesn't it make sense to keep them higher for as long as possible if inflation's still running hot, we have full employment, and there's no liquidity problems in the plumbing of the system that seem to have materialized? Like, the idea would be that an economy that's able to sustain higher rates is actually healthier than one that needs zero interest rates. And so I alluded to the point that Saifedean made at the end of the Bitcoin Standard, which was, if the only thing Bitcoin does in terms of forcing action on the central bank is force it to do more conservative monetary policy will have been successful. I'm not saying that Bitcoin is controlling Jerome Powell, but I think ideally, as American citizens and people living in an economy, higher rates is not necessarily a bad thing unless you're addicted to debt. It forces people to make better capital allocation decisions. It gets all the bad companies and wasteful spending out of the economy and really recalibrates things. It seems like things are on good footing. I think Trump should lean into that. He already is, but I think the obsession with returning to zero interest rate policy is a bit odd to me, considering over the course of my career following this stuff, ZERP has always been looked at as something that's not ideal and signals that things are not all well. So it is like a bit counterintuitive and paradoxical to me.
I mean, I have a couple takes. First of all, I mean, that ramble doesn't really give me a lot of confidence in our government, but and it's part of the reason why I have Bitcoin. But first of all, I mean, real inflation is much higher than 3% or whatever you quoted.
Yeah,
I don't pretend to know the exact number. It's hard to calculate. But I wouldn't be surprised if for the actual things that we need to spend on to live our lives, it's in like the low double digits. So you have that data point. And then, but then on the opposite side, and so, I mean, that would push to keep rates higher for longer. But on the opposite side, we have a massive government debt, that in an ideal situation, probably for people that hold hard assets, an ideal situation, we inflate away. And the housing market is a fucking mess. And we're seeing a situation where people are locked into low rates. Anyone that's on a variable rate is just absolutely wrecked. And the buyers are just not there. The buyers are waiting for a cut. And so the real question to me is, and then you have a ton of people, pretty much not the people listening to the show, but you have the majority of Americans, at least the ones that own homes, the majority of their net worth is in their house and is locked in their house. So we could be on the verge of a major housing crisis in terms of home prices. And that could have pretty devastating effects for a lot of people. And having a relief valve on the rates coming down could help loosen that market a bit. Because we see a lot of sellers and very few buyers right now, it seems.
No, I addressed these points in the newsletter last night too. First, on your point on real inflation being way higher than CPI, obviously that's true. So another reason to keep them higher for longer. Second point is the assumption that lowering the Fed funds rate target will lead to lower treasury yields, I think is idiotic, especially considering what we saw last September when Powell began lowering them from 5.5% down to, I think, 4.5%, maybe 4.25% is where the yields went higher. Like, so it's not guaranteed that if the Fed lowers the Fed funds rate that treasury yields are going to go down. And then to the housing market, like, I think this is actually healthy. You have the market developing to a point where, to your point, like, people are locked into lower rates. But many people are willing to sell their houses, particularly in some of the bigger markets like Austin, much of Florida, California. And you do have an overrepresentation on the seller side, and the sellers right now are holding on to the hope that they're going to be able to offload their houses at 2022 valuations. But I think reality is hitting them in the face, and you're beginning to see prices fall. So I think the market is beginning to correct the housing market prices, because there's two things that come into consideration there. Obviously, the mortgage rate and the actual cost of the house. The cost of the house can come down to a certain point. People may be able to stomach 7% mortgage rates because you're paying that interest on a property that's worth significantly less. And then to the point of, does a housing crash create a systemic liquidity crisis? Potentially, but that's dependent on how much exposure the banks have to mortgages, mortgage-backed securities, and all that stuff. And I'm not going to pretend to know the exposure that banks have to those products right now, but there's a potential that prices could fall, and if the banks don't have exposure to those MBSs like they did in 2008, 2009, that it could just, you could just have a market clearing mechanism of pricing and housing.
Did you see the YouTube comment?
What?
We made the title of the YouTube $627,000 because it seemed oddly specific. So it'd be more likely for people to click. A couple of thoughts there. First of all, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right on treasury yields becoming uncontrollable. I mean, this is the Mandible's thesis playing out. At the end of the day, markets are pricing U.S. government debt risk. So we can very much lose control of the situation. We might have already passed that point. It seems relatively inevitable that we will pass that point at some point, and it'll run away from us. On the housing stuff, like, look, I think ultimately, particularly as Bitcoiners, there's this thesis that I think is correct, which is, once you have a store of value like Bitcoin that is strictly better than investment real estate, you strip away the premium, the investment premium that we see on housing, and housing becomes more affordable. It becomes a true utility good, right? Or close, much closer to a utility good than an investment good. It's a place where your family lives and grows, and that's why you buy it. You buy it so that you have a place to live and you have a place to raise a family. So that's theoretically, I think, correct in terms of the direction we're going in. That being said, there's been decades long of government policy propping this thing up as an investment good, as the investment good. And millions of Americans are levered up on it, and the majority of their net worth is built into it. So I think no matter how you cut it, that resetting is going to be fucking brutal for people. And you might be able to do it in a softer way. I don't pretend to have the answer there. All I can say is that people should protect themselves and not end up in that situation where they're levered up on real estate. And I think we've been pretty consistent on that. But the reality on the ground is that millions of Americans are. And if we see a major housing collapse or correction or whatever the hell you want to call it, that will be brutal. That will be absolutely brutal. So it's hard for me to advocate for that, particularly since it doesn't really affect me directly in either direction. But it's something to keep in mind there.
Yeah. And one other thing to add to this whole conversation about lowering rates, should Jerome Powell do it? Inflation's not as bad. Again, CPI inflation is not as bad, but as we all know, real inflation is higher. I mean, with everything that's been popping off over the last week in Israel and Iran, like, oil prices have shot up by, I think, 10 or 15%. Yep. And that's the base of the economy. And so to think that oil prices, many people are calling for $100 a barrel later this summer if cooler heads don't prevail in the Middle East. Like, that is the base input of all economic activity. So that's going to have knock-on inflationary effects. And if you're lowering rates as oil's jumping up to $100 a barrel, probably going to be fuel in the inflation fire.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're pretty much stuck between a rock and a hard place, and there's no right answer here. And that's why we Bitcoin. And it should be interesting to watch it play out. Because ultimately, Marty and I aren't in control of this, and neither are any of the freaks. It's a few corrupt people that get to choose which path this government, and by extension, because we're such a large economy, the world goes here. But it seems like no matter how you play it, it's could be bad. It will be bad. The question is, I think, timing and severity. is really the question on the back of my mind. That's the situation I'm monitoring, is timing and severity.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why I wrote the newsletter last night, because I you go on the RHR copy podcast All In, like these guys have been begging for lower rates for months now, and it's very thinly veiled sort of
egregious. They just want to pump their bags.
Yeah. It's like, I don't care about inflation. It's a bit disingenuous for those guys to do it, because they're not really affected by the inflation, because they own the assets. They're going to go up higher than the inflation rate. So,
yeah, I mean, if I was going to speak from a completely selfish point of view, I think we're long-term fucked anyway, so we might as well just lower rates. I'm already all in on hard assets, specifically Bitcoin. It'd be nice to have my bags pumped earlier rather than later. Rip off the Band-Aid and just fucking YOLO into it. And everyone that has any kind of savings can just YOLO alongside. But I think it's good that you and us cover all the knock-on effects there rather than just blindly shilling our bags. I would say we gave All In a lot of shit last week, which was completely deserved. I don't know if you listened at all to their podcast, but they admitted that the reason they didn't release last week was because of the Elon Trump fight, which everyone, by the way, has forgotten, because the world is at war. So there's no reason to remind you that Elon said Trump is on the Epstein list, and that's why it hasn't been released.
Yeah. Yeah. Been a crazy week. I mean, last week we weren't on YouTube because the internet was under attack. And I think the timing of that was very coincidental. The internet was under attack globally, and then 6 hours later, Israel was bombing Tehran.
We're so dedicated to RHR that we're coming to you live on a national holiday, Juneteenth. All the banks are closed today. You can't move money in the banks. You can't trade stocks, but RHR is live here on this national holiday.
No comment. We're here. We'll be here. National holiday.
Since Marty doesn't have a comment on that, shout out to Seth Zap 21,000 Sats. Said, boys, how are we feeling today? Soap Miner Zap 21,000 Sats. Fantastic soap. Go check out Soap Miner. It's the only soap we use in our household. Fran Zap 69,000 Sats. I keep missing the live show and catching up later. Not this time. Love you guys. Stay humble, stack Sats. Fran Zap is the maintainer of Zap Store, an alternative app store on Android. Go check it out. And Ride or Die Freak Map 21 Zap 21,000 Sats. Thank you, freaks, for supporting the show.
Let's go. Love you guys. Yeah. I mean, we got a bunch of topics on the list, so we'll probably weave through this topic. But I think one of the things I want to say, Logan, do you want to say your funny timing thing? One of the things I want to say is, like, whether you said lower rates would definitely pump Bitcoin's bags faster, but I could see a path where Bitcoin pumps regardless of what happens.
I agree with that.
With interest specifically. And it looks like the topic list is weaving from national headlines to Bitcoin specific. So the next thing we have on the list is the fact that Knot's nodes have grown to 13.3% of the network.
Yeah. Go scroll down. Look at that chart. Just straight up. Parabolic curve.
Oh, that's why I'm on the wrong timeline.
I mean, Coin Logan Dance. Has it up.
I haven't been on CoinDance in a while.
I know, so. Just to show, like, repeat of 2017 feelings, is CoinDance has only been relevant, was a site that was last relevant in 2017, when everyone was pressing refresh during the fork wars. But yeah, it goes to show part of the reason why my current vibes feel a lot of 2017-esque vibes.
Yeah,
not exactly the same. There's a lot of differences, but the vibes feel similar.
Vibes feel very similar. Stay focused, stay moisturized, stay in your lane. Focus on yourself.
Talking about focusing on yourself, the beauty of running a Bitcoin node is that it allows you to interact with the Bitcoin network without trusting anyone else. If you're not using your own Bitcoin node, you're using someone else's node. That is usually a company's node, or if you're using like a Sparrow or Electrum, it could be an independent Electrum server that is being run. That node can see your transactions, so there's a privacy risk, and see your balances, and also enforces the rules of the network. So you're relying on someone else to enforce the rules of the network. The best way to use Bitcoin in the most trust minimized way possible is to use and run and use your own node. This is why it's incredibly important as a community that we have been very focused on trying to make it as easy as possible to run a node, as cheap as possible, make it accessible to as many people as possible. Right now, the easiest way to run a node that you actually use and connect to all your wallets is Start9, in my opinion. They sell pre-built boxes, but the cool part about Start9 is it's open source. So you can actually take an old computer or build a new computer, and you can easily flash Start9 OS on it. Then you can choose if you want to run Bitcoin Core or Bitcoin Knots. It's just a couple clicks, very straightforward. And my personal favorite is then you can run the mempool open source project, so you can get fee estimation and the entire mempool experience locally on your own node. And you can run an Electrum server, so you can easily connect that to Sparrow. It also has Lightning options if you want to run your own Lightning node. But I would say that's a plus-plus thing. Those first three things are the keys. Bitcoin Core, Knots, Electrum server, mempool space, and boom, you're off to the races.
I would throw in LeBitcoin. I don't think LeBitcoin's getting enough love in all this debate.
Eric Voskuhl was on Brink's podcast. And he did an hour and a half discussion about LeBitcoin and how they think about the UTXO set. Everyone should go listen to that. It was a really great conversation. I agree that he's probably not getting enough love, but I wouldn't run it in production right now, personally. But that's up to other people.
I would say it's been more maintained than Knots, I would imagine.
I mean, Knots. I controversially said last week that I wouldn't run Knots in production either. But Knots at the core is based on Bitcoin Core with patches that Luke has put on top. And Bitcoin Core is, you know, one of the most reviewed software projects in human history. LeBitcoin is a completely novel implementation of Bitcoin protocol. You have a lot more up in the air there. Do you not remember? Okay, continue.
Well, I know you're about to reference, but there was another thing that I'm going to reference that like shows the value of this different implementation was the 2019 CVE bug. Like LeBitcoin wasn't affected because they didn't have that. They don't have the UTXO model. And I believe they were actually able to flag it to Core.
Fair enough. And it's a vital project and I'm glad it exists. And I hope it gets more resources and more love and more eyes. That would be awesome. And that's what I'm hoping for out of all of this controversy. I think that will be one of the biggest benefits we see is just more people working on Bitcoin protocol stuff and more eyes on alternative implementations. What I was going to say is I think it was like a year ago or a year and a half ago where it was generating insecure private keys. For people that were using LeBitcoin, which is probably the single most important thing to get right. And that got through the review process. So as someone who is not the most technically competent, but more technically competent than most people, I have reservations running it. And that's just my personal opinion. The beauty is you can run it if you want to. I do not think it's on Start9 yet. I'm not sure exactly how you'd go about the process of running it. I'm not quite sure if you can run it with Electrum server. Probably need to do more research on that front because I do not have a hard answer, but I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't compatible with Electrum server. Might be wrong though. So
yeah,
if you know otherwise, please say in the live chat.
I'm not going to recommend anybody to run any particular implementation. I would default to Core myself. But for those who care, the Bitcoin doesn't filter anything, right? It's just anything that's valid from a consensus perspective is valid in the Bitcoin. So I think that is the implementation that matches as close as possible to consensus with the sort of policy laid forth in the implementation. Boom, boom, boom. Moving on. We've got big news out of Iran. Obviously, they're in a war. I think it's safe to call this a war right now. War tactics can get dirty in many different ways. One way is via cyber attacks. And so the Iranian bank, SEPA Bank, was attacked by cyber attackers earlier this week, and all the bank data was erased and their ATMs were rendered useless. Pretty scary. I mean, this is obviously Iranian citizens were directly affected by this, but this is par for the course with the fiat system. You can wake up one day, and if you're in the middle of a war, your adversary, if they're competent enough and technically capable, can attack your banking system and erase your account data. So you can wake up with literally no money and no way for the bank to figure out how much money you actually had there or for you to prove it.
Before I get there, I see Life is Good in the YouTube comments calling me a pussy, a racist, and a coward. The pussy and the racist part is one thing, but calling me a coward is crosses the line. I'm not a racist person, but you can make your own judgments based on my long public track record. As far as Juneteenth goes, the retarded part about it is that it's a national bank holiday. I don't know anyone that gets off of work except for bankers today. And we should have less national bank holidays and more trading. Money shouldn't stop. Money should be running 24/7, 365, and so should markets. So fuck you. Anyway, to the bank thing. I mean, I titled this episode "Bitcoin Cold Storage is a Must," and I think these two stories really highlight that. Right? You can have a hacker wipe bank records. You can have a hacker wipe centralized databases. And the next story is about the same Israeli hacking team hacked a Iranian Bitcoin exchange and sent all of their Bitcoin and Tether and other assets to burn addresses and burn the assets. So this is not something that necessarily, yeah, they sent it to like fuck the Iranian military addresses, is like IRGC addresses, and instead of stealing the money. So this is not like, it's easy to say Bitcoin fixes this. It only fixes this if you take cold storage, if you hold your keys offline and they're not connected to the internet. And in this practice, even something as keeping it simple, just a single sig, cold card, stamp it on steel, you're protected from this type of attack. If this is in your threat model, which it probably should be in this day and age for most people, unfortunately, hot wallets don't fix this. Phone hot wallets don't fix this. Custodial accounts don't fix this. Exchanges don't fix this. ETFs don't fix this. Only cold storage Bitcoin fixes this. And I think it's a good reminder for people about how lucky we are that we have that ability, that we have that capability easily at our disposal.
Agreed.
Sure.
Take the time, learn. Logan, you pull that back up, but this conversion brought to you by opportunity cost. $90 million, Elliptic. Aren't they the chain surveillance company?
Yeah.
You should be denominating.
Elliptic can go. Elliptic can go fuck themselves, but they had a good write-up on the Iranian hack of the exchange. Yeah, hack. The
863 Bitcoin worth. So
the bank thing is straight out of Mr. Robot. Like, that's the Mr. Robot attack. Just wipe everything and put the world into economic chaos and start from fresh, start from zero.
Well, that's, I wrote about this the other night, but this is an escalation the likes of which we haven't seen before, I think. So in the history of Bitcoin, obviously there's been a ton of bank failures and central bank mishaps that have pushed people to Bitcoin. Obviously Cyprus in 2012, 2013, what we've seen in Lebanon and Turkey, in Lebanon with their central bank debasing the currency and then basically telling people that they don't have access to their money and taking it away from them. Turkey debasing the currency, India changing out banknotes and forcing people to exchange them. And ultimately, many people were not able to do that, so they just lost their money overnight. Similarly, Nigeria, that happened a couple of years ago as well. And obviously in 2022, you had the US and G7 nations freeze Russia's treasury assets and basically say, you don't have access to these. We're taking hundreds of billions of dollars from you. But this is a new type of bank attack, an attack on a bank that could be a slippery slope. Like, if this is, it's decided that this is okay and within the boundaries of war, I wonder how many banks are susceptible to an attack like this, how easy it would be to wage on other banks. And if one country does it, we've been led to believe that Iran has a pretty sophisticated hacking capability. Who's to say that they won't retaliate in the same way? And then you have some sort of cascading effect. So this is definitely something to pay attention to in the weeks and the months to come.
Look, I think most banks are probably susceptible to this. I mean, they run on such old infrastructure. And did you watch Mr. Robot?
I never did, no.
It's worthy of a watch. But one of the best TV shows in the last decade. The question really is, what is their backup policy? And I like to think that a lot of the majors have very stringent backup policies. And if they don't, and they saw this attack, hopefully it was a wake-up call for them. And so if they have a backup policy and it's an off-site, offline backup, then the question is how long the downtime is, right? How long are ATMs down? How long are accounts down? How long does that period last? And that could be quite chaotic. And the reason I brought up Mr. Robot is because backups were targeted as well. But that's a little bit of a spoiler, but it's also like a decade old show, so I don't really care.
Yeah. What was it called? E Corp coin?
Yeah, they fucking nailed it.
I've seen clips. I remember the memes, but
Because that, I think that was like season three or something. It's like Bitcoin enters the picture, but, and it was like Bitcoin versus the CBDC effectively.
Yeah.
But it lines up, like, it's pretty crazy watching where we currently are in the world compared to my memory of Mr. Robot. And they got a lot of things right. We got 100,000 sat zap from Damiax RVNX, to be or not to be. Thank you, sir.
That is the question. Keeping on this theme of what's happening in Iran in reaction to the cyber attacks that they've been subjected to over the last week, the Iranian government decided to cut the internet nationwide. So another reason to keep your Bitcoin in cold storage. And I think it highlights the way in which things can escalate. And I can see what you're probably going to say, like, the excuse was to prevent any more cyber attacks from coming. But there's also, you know, maybe the Iranian regime that's in power doesn't want people within their borders who would like to see the regime toppled to express support for what may be going on in terms of the regime itself being targeted, the government.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's for a combination of reasons. I think it's, as you said, partially for defense. I mean, you also have to remember that we saw that Ukrainian drone attack in Russia. Those were running on Russian LTE networks. So they were using local internet networks to remotely pilot those drones when they attacked. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's concerns on that front as well. But at the same time, yes, probably a big part of it is trying to control the messaging internally within the country, make it seem like, that they're winning and that the regime is in a good place, and not allow opposition media or just any kind of media get to people and cut off that flow of communication. I didn't include it in the chat, but in the show notes, but I also saw at one point there was reports that the Israelis had hacked into the TV networks and were like broadcasting stuff to topple the regime. So that's just another aspect you can watch there in terms of cutting off internet, cutting off communications. And this is why creating robust open protocols is so incredibly important, because if you have centralized command and control structures, they're obviously vulnerable choke points that at any point can be used against the population. And I put this in the software releases, but while we're on the subject, Koala Sat, one of the Bitcoin Nostr developers, is actually working on an app called Samiz. I think that's how it's pronounced. But the idea here is mesh networking for Nostr. So because Nostr, all messages are signed and hashed, so you know there's integrity there, you can imagine a situation where you're able to, when you get internet somewhere, or if someone is able to get internet, you can download recent Nostr notes. You don't have to trust them for the integrity of the notes. You know the notes haven't been changed or modified. You're just trusting them to actually serve you up notes and not leave things off. And then you can interact with it. And then when you're able to connect to someone who eventually has internet through Bluetooth, it looks like he's using, that could then get broadcast out to the world. And we've seen similar projects on the Bitcoin side of things as well. Ultimately, with a Bitcoin transaction, you can actually save a signed Bitcoin transaction on a USB drive. And without trust, you can pass that off to someone. And it only goes to the address that you've already dictated it goes to. And if that person is able to get that USB drive to somewhere with internet, it will then be broadcast. So these systems can be quite robust. Unfortunately, a lot of the tooling doesn't really happen unless there's pressure, but it's better to have these tools ready and available for us and people to be skilled with them before you actually need it. Because obviously trying to figure this shit out on the fly when you don't have internet, is much more difficult.
What are the go-to hardware devices for mesh networks these days? We were talking about Gotenna years ago, and there was the other one that was coming out of Venezuela, but I don't think that ever got off the ground. Are people just using cell phones these days? Or
the number one project is LoRa Mesh. And then there's also Meshtastic, which has gotten a lot of usage lately and a lot more contributors lately. The problem with Gotenna was proprietary and closed source, and they saved their best tech for the military and the police. Pretty much. So it's like fundamentally opposed to open protocols and open networks. So that was a false start. I do think the dream is to have this stuff mobile focused, and that's one of the things the Meshtastic project has done really well. You have like this low powered device that's relatively easy to build. And then it connects via Bluetooth to your phone. So you're able to interact with it on the mobile device that you're used to and use apps that are on your phone. But the communication method is Meshtastic. Now, the biggest issue is range. So a lot of times it works better in an urban environment. We saw the Bitcoin veterans deploy units at scale in the aftermath of the North Carolina hurricane. And what they were doing was they were like trying to put it on like hilltops and stuff, like repeater nodes on hilltops. If we, depending on the threat model, depending on the situation, Starlink also opens up a lot of possibilities here, because if Starlink is still operating, and right now there's in total 15,000 satellites in space, half of them are Starlink. Like the amount of satellites that Elon has put up in space over the last few years is staggering, and the pace is staggering. But because of Starlink, as long as Starlink's online, you can take a Starlink mini dish and a power bank, and you have high speed, low latency internet anywhere in the world. You couple that with mesh, and then you can imagine a situation where you could be in a remote place, 1,000 people have these low powered mesh devices, and then one person has basically a Starlink that connects them to the outside world. And that is pretty promising in my book.
Yeah. Crazy times. Mesh, it's been a topic on the show since we started. Like it would, I mean, as you just mentioned, it does seem like it's getting more viable, but why is it important to anybody out there? You need redundant systems, particularly messaging systems in times like this. When the internet goes out, mesh is an alternative to the internet. You can go all the way down. Ham radio is an alternative to these communications protocols as well. So seeing mesh capabilities for Noster is you're combining two really powerful, you're combining an open source communications protocol with an alternative transmission network, which is highly valuable. Redundancy, it's key, especially in chaotic times. And you want to build out the redundancy before things get chaotic. So if you're one of those people who believes we're going into World War III, I'm not so sure. I think cooler heads will prevail. But if you are, you think this stuff is going to spread, prepare your local area with a mesh network before it's too late.
NVK, Zapdos 21,000 Sats, says, use Bitcoin seeds for long-term storage. Pubcos want to remove your agency and privacy. Yeah, I mean, I would add on to that, if the Israeli government or any other government, sophisticated governments in your threat model, BitKey is unlikely to protect you from it.
Be aware. We have this on the list too. Not wrapping this up. The Iran, obviously, Iran-Israel news is top of mind for everybody. So moving down the list, we have polymarket odds for the U.S. military action against Iran happening before July. They're currently standing at 43%, I believe, 44%, but they were as high as 74% on the 17th.
Yeah, I mean, when we started the show, it was at 63%. But anyway, the reason I put these links here is I've been bullish on prediction markets for a while. We're finally living in a world with high volume prediction markets. Unfortunately, they haven't been built on Bitcoin at scale yet. I would like to see that happen. I feel like it's a huge miss that the number one prediction market in the world is running on a shitcoin. But all that said, if you do want to stay up to date and you are trying to see if the U.S. is getting directly involved or if things are escalating, because I think Iran's single piece of leverage, their biggest piece of leverage right now, is closing the Strait of Hormuz, I would just follow those two markets. And basically, they run on insider trading. There's no such thing as insider trading in prediction markets, but it's the general concept that if someone knows about something ahead of time, they're going to try and make some money off of it, and they're going to go and place a bet in one direction or the other. So you can track basically those two things and the Bitcoin price, and that's all the signal you really need to keep up to date on changes. I would say that. Logan, you can pull up that primer link that I put at the end. I mean, the U.S. is already involved in this war. Trump is already, he keeps saying we over and over again, like it's like we are involved, like the U.S. government is involved. There's no shot in hell he didn't give permission to Bibi before it happened. So basically at this point, I think the real way of looking at it is how much more involved would the U.S. get? because unfortunately, it seems like we as an Americans are deeply involved in this attack and this war.
Yeah, and if you understand the history of Iran over the last 60 years, this is why I've been pretty vocal on Twitter. I've only sent a few tweets, but I really don't want to get dragged into another Middle Eastern war. I think the whole reasoning behind, like, it's nuclear weapons, like, we need to stop, like, I'm not falling for weapons of mass destruction twice. Iran's been on the verge, two weeks away from nuclear weapon capabilities for the last 30 years, literally, like, not falling for that. And then, like, you have Lindsey Graham out there, like, overtly calling for regime change, and going back to the history, particularly of the U.S.'s involvement in Iran. Like, you have this this theocracy, essentially, because of regime change we did back in the 60s, which led to a revolution, or which led to, like, an usurpation of the government that we inserted with this radical theocracy. And I'm not saying I think the radical theocracy is good or something I would want or something I believe most of the Iranian people want, but I don't think it's our job to go in there and kick them out and try to replace them with somebody. It's proven historically to never work. I mean, not only with Iran, with Iraq, Syria, we're going through it now, Libya, Afghanistan. I guess we don't really have a good record when it comes to this stuff.
Iran is literally sandwiched between Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
It's like the fucking trifecta. Yeah, I think, and I think American HODL made a really good point. As Bitcoiners, the community is quite global. So whether it's Ukraine and Russia or Iran and Israel, we tend to have friends on and friends on both sides of all of these wars, and will continue to. And it just, I think, further highlights that it's the people that just get really fucked, right? And you have these corrupt governments fighting it out at the people's expense, and usually for their own benefit. Incredibly fucked up and sad to see. And Trump ran on no more wars. And this is probably his single biggest failure since he's been president.
Yeah, well, tying this into the interest rate discussion at the beginning of this episode, like, if I see one, like, piece of light at the end of the tunnel to de-escalate this as quickly as possible, it is because Trump wants the economy to be humming, and he wants to make sure inflation rises. And with both these charts, particularly with the Strait of Hormuz, like, if they shut that down, it's, I believe, 20% of global oil production flows through that strait, maybe even more. That would be significantly inflationary for the base economic input. And so prices would rise dramatically. And so I hope that Trump has that in mind and is incentivized to make sure that that doesn't happen, which would proceed some sort of de-escalation. But bombs are dropping. Iran's hitting Tel Aviv directly. I think it's a type of warfare that the Israelis have not seen brought to their home ever. It could be shocking, and people's eyes go red in the middle of war. So would not be surprised if it escalates from here. Really hoping and praying that it doesn't, though.
Paulie Zapp, 21,000 sats. All wars are banksters' wars. I will say that the meme that Bitcoin not bombs and Bitcoin stops wars, with the dichotomy of Coinbase sponsoring the military march through DC, is quite
Coinbase making some very, very questionable decisions.
There was two main sponsors there. It was Coinbase and Palantir.
Interesting.
But it was so unbelievable to people that they think that was AI generated. Like Coinbase was one of the main sponsors of the march. That is true.
They've got JP Morgan launching stable coins on Base. Everything's Base now. Will Coinbase be usurped? Maybe that's a polymarket we should spin up. Will Coinbase be replaced with a dominant exchange by 2030?
I mean, the level of integrity of Bitcoin influencers today is so low that all Coinbase had to do was release a pretty looking Genesis block Amex card, and all sins were forgiven.
Yeah, you can tell they're leaning back into like Bitcoin Maxi. It's convenient for them now. Bitcoin.
It's just an Infinity scam.
Yeah.
I mean, the card has the Genesis block on it, but at the same time, the only way you get the top sats back is if you keep a large amount of assets with them. And what they're expecting you to do is to be staking USDC, which they're one of the largest owners of, on Base, their shitcoin chain. So it is the most obvious affinity scam in that regard. It literally has Bitcoin on the cover, and then behind the scenes is just layers of shitcoins that Coinbase owns on the back.
Beware, freaks. Beware. Next up on the list, the EU's encryption roadmap makes everyone less safe. So we've been covering this topic for many years. The EU, many other countries for that matter, have been trying to institute backdoors into end-to-end encrypted technology. And they released, or the EFF has joined more than 80 civil society organizations, companies, and cybersecurity experts in signing a letter urging the European Commission to change course on its recently announced technology roadmap on encryption. The roadmap, part of the EU's Protect EU strategy, discusses new ways for law enforcement to access encrypted data. That framing is dangerously flawed. Let's be clear, there is no technical lawful access to end-to-end encrypted messages that preserves security and privacy. Any attempt to circumvent encryption, like client-side scanning, creates new vulnerabilities threatening the very people governments claim to protect. So the EU is continuing on their march to eliminate privacy from anybody living within the European Union, and they're still going for the back doors. And it seems like the framing or the language around the framing is changing. They want lawful access and client-side scanning instead of using the term backdoor overtly.
Yeah, it's just complicated words for backdoors. There's no such thing as a secure backdoor. Historically, this is what authoritarian governments have attempted because they want full control over their population. That is the real reason. Everything else is a fluff reason. And I think it's a good point to make for our next story, which is that our friends over at Maple AI got banned in the Chinese App Store because it's too private and it's too secure. This should not come as a surprise to anyone. It means they're doing something right, and authoritarian government wants to block them. The sad trend that we're seeing is that this is spreading to other governments, right, per the last story. And we need to push back hard on that, both from a tool side and a policy side and education side.
This is a badge of honor for Maple. I'm very proud to be a supporter of Open Secret and Maple AI at 1031. This is what you want to see. They're doing it right. And I believe we covered it 2 weeks ago, but it's even, at least for the AI companies coming here, where law enforcement approached OpenAI and others and said, we need you to keep your logs so that we can see what your users are pinging your models for if we want to. And so with Maple AI, the way they've construed the logic and the way it works is it's end-to-end encrypted from the secure enclave in your phone to the secure enclave in a cloud. Maple has no way to know what you're asking the models and what the models are sending you. They put the model logic in the secure enclave, and you have the ability to ping it from your device, whether that's your phone or your computer.
Yeah, it's basically a similar model to how Signal works, but for an AI chatbot. And they're iterating quickly. They're adding features. Supposedly, they're going to add the ability to upload files soon. So you can have it analyze files. And image generation is a hot requested feature. They recently added DeepSeek support. So if you haven't tried it, if you use AI chatbots, you should try it out. All these, pretty much everyone else is collecting and tracking your information and then presumably selling and sharing it. So you should check it out. I've been using it more and more, and it's quite useful. It's turning into a real useful tool in my toolbox.
Yeah, and they have a mobile app now too. Released that a few years ago.
That's what got banned in China. Presumably the web app will be a little bit more resistant to censorship. And is another reason why it's important to offer your users a web app and not be stuck in the silos of Google and Apple's app stores. Because you do have more freedom to, first of all, ship updates and ship the product you actually want to ship to users, but also the users accessing them. It's not a perfect solution. The Chinese famously have their great firewall that they ban websites. But people in China do get through with certain VPNs and certain ways of using Tor. And it's not out of, it'll be harder for them to find it, but not impossible.
No. So be aware. Go check out Maple AI at trymaple.ai. I believe that's it. Let me pull it up to make.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. Trymaple.ai. That's right. Moving on to the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, coming from Tanzania, where the government has blocked access to X and Telegram amid financial, political, and media repression. Tanzania restricted access to X and Telegram across major internet providers following a hack of the Tanzanian police force's official account. The platforms remain offline more than 3 weeks later in the lead up to October's presidential and parliamentary elections. The timing of the shutdown also coincides with the kidnapping of Ugandan journalist, lawyer, and Oslo Freedom Forum speaker Agather Author, who says she was tortured and sexually assaulted while in Tanzanian custody before being left at the border between Tanzania and Uganda. Recently, the government also banned the use of foreign currency in daily transactions, forcing citizens to rely on weakening Tanzanian shilling. And in April, the opposition Chadema party was disqualified from participating in the October elections under the pretense of treason against party leader Tundu Lissu. The censorship on online platforms, suppression of opposition and dissidents, and laws banning foreign currency all signal a coordinated strategy to silence criticism and strip Tanzanians of both their political voice and financial autonomy. That was a heavy one. For more stories like this, make sure you sign up for the Human Rights Foundation Financial Freedom Report at financialfreedomreport.org. Dang.
Well, just another example of why it's important that we have tools that are robust and censorship resistant and open, like Bitcoin and Nostr.
Yeah. Whew. That might have been the heaviest Human Rights Foundation update I've ever read. And make sure that Bitcoin succeeds to stuff like this becomes significantly harder for these despotic governments. Try to lighten the mood with some boost from last week's episode. While I'm finding that, if anybody wants to fill dead air, Logan, do you have any jokes you want to tell?
I told my one joke years ago.
Yeah, why don't you tell it to us again?
No, you're not going to listen. It's insubordination.
Two snares and a cymbal fall off a cliff. Ah, fuck.
I've heard it. There it is. All right, we've got one boost read from last week's episode. Bitcoin is designed to pump forever. Rabbit hole recap. Forget what number that is. I don't know what number we're on. The title is cut off on Fountain. Rabbit Hole Recap 361. Pringle Mac 22,222 sats, twos across the board, pound drum boost, always be bold, all gas, no breaks, love Sil and Tony. Orange Heart, Purple Heart, Orange Heart, Purple Heart. Love you, Sil. Love you, Tony.
Thank Much you, love. Guys. Thank you.
Yeah. Right, I'm seeing Mr. Dinkles in the comments saying that article should make Western world folks feel really lucky. And it does, despite all the bad things happening in the world right now. Count your blessings, be appreciative for what you have. And I think that is what the Human Rights Foundation aims to do, is to put things in perspective. And that section definitely did for me.
Dude, 100% cosign. Incredibly grateful.
Yeah.
We are very lucky.
Oh. Some news out of Bitcoin Prague. I believe, did he announce this at Prague? Out of Bull Bitcoin, Francis from Bull Bitcoin.
I think he announced it right beforehand. Or maybe this has been live for a bit, but he highlighted it. And I thought it was worth highlighting because it's a clever use of liquid.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, Bull Bitcoin became the world's first exchange to implement dollar cost average straight to wallet over Liquid Network. I've been using it every hour and it's absolutely flawless. Next, we add auto swap to Bull Bitcoin wallet, so LBTC automatically converts to BTC. Once a threshold is reached, default is 1 million sats. This also offers some nice on-chain privacy benefits too. We are cooking some incredible features which combine non-custodial exchange with self-custodial wallet. I really think this year we will achieve the all-time best Bitcoin user experience. Bull Bitcoin. That is unique. So DCA using what? So you DCA from your bank account to LBTC, then you hit a certain threshold and it kicks in on-chain. Yeah.
Yeah, so you set up – so Bull Bitcoin, first of all, is self-custody only, right? So they never custody funds. When you buy from them, they immediately send to you. And historically, that has been on-chain. Obviously, there's a concern over not only current fees, but potential future fees if you're UTXO. If those amounts are too small, then your fee burden as a percent of the future could be quite large. So they implemented this. So you auto-stack to Liquid. And then they built their own self-custody open source mobile wallet. So you're doing it to that. And then once it hits a certain balance – I don't know, maybe it's user configurable. Let's just say it's 100,000 sats. Once it hits 100,000 sats, then it swaps over to on-chain. And why do you want that? You get two benefits, right? You get the benefit of lower fees on Liquid because very few people use it. And you get better custody guarantees than using something like a Strike in fully custodial mode, right? Because Liquid has a federation, so you can kind of think of it as like multi-sig custody, right? Like it's like a 16 entity. I think at any given time, it's like 16 entities basically have multi-sig keys that control Liquid. And people will argue semantic-wise if that's custodial or not custodial, but I think it's strictly speaking, you can easily say it's not self-custody. And you do run the risk that Liquid could go down or something like that, or they could rug. So you do that with smaller amounts, and then once it gets to a larger amount, you move over to on-chain in a seamless way. Really clever. I like this. Bull Bitcoin's constantly innovating and really impressive operation over there.
Yeah, and I confused the announcement. I mean, Francis teased it, but apparently he's making an announcement in Prague. I'm not sure if it happened today or will happen tomorrow.
It did happen. He presented today. And it's basically their version of, just to go back to the previous arguments in Bitcoin Twitter land, it's like their version of Seedless as a product using their mobile wallet. So seeds are powerful. Seeds are amazingly useful and empowering to individuals, but obviously they require immense personal responsibility. And if someone has access to your seed words, they can spend your Bitcoin. If you lose them, then nobody can spend your Bitcoin. You just lost all your money. And it requires personal responsibility. So it appears that they have launched a product within their Bull Bitcoin wallet that is a two of two multi-sig, where one key is held hot on your phone and the other key is held by their key server. Supposedly that is blinded, so you don't have as much privacy risk as other implementations. And the key server, you can set limits to it so that not all the money can be removed at once if keys are compromised. Obviously, this requires trust. I will say that their messaging around it is quite responsible. They say it's a suitable alternative for custodial exchange accounts, custodial wallets, physical backups for a hot wallet, BIP39 passphrase for physical hot wallet backups. But it's not a replacement for long-term cold storage, hardware wallets, or multi-signature wallets. So it's supposed to be a stepping stone to basically make their existing hot wallet infrastructure more secure, easier to use, harder to lose. Love to see it.
Love to see it. Shout out to Bull Bitcoin. Been around forever. Francis is one of those people that you want in the industry building, and they are continuously innovating. So very happy for them, all their users. Keeping the cypherpunk in Bitcoin product building, which is not easy. They took the hard route. It's great to see them launching this stuff. We mentioned BLE Mesh for Nostr Notes earlier. Daemon and Freedom by Suarez. Is this the, what is this?
Oh, I mostly put that there as a reminder to myself. Sorry. I recommended Kill Decision, and someone asked in the comments if I read Daemon and Freedom by Suarez. Those came out like maybe 15 years ago. Highly recommend. Amazing reads. And anything by Suarez is a worthy read, but Daemon and Freedom specifically, if you're going to only read two books by Suarez, even before Kill Decision, Daemon and Freedom are the way. And it basically sets up like a Bitcoin and Nostr future without Bitcoin Nostr and AI future without actually ever mentioning Bitcoin Nostr or AI. But yeah.
Beware. One thing you don't have on the list, probably should mention, Genius Act. Seems like it's going to get signed into law later this week. It's being marketed as a way to create regulatory clarity for stablecoin issuers in the United States and a way to bolster demand for treasury market as they are forced to use it as liquid reserves for their stablecoins. Been a long time coming. Hopefully now we can get to higher priorities. The market structure bill, for those who are unaware, has actually become probably the highest priority now because the language around protecting open source developers has been included in the latest draft of that bill. And so I think if you're somebody who cares about open source developers being able to write code and not having to worry about getting thrown in a cage because of the way end users leverage their software, the market structure bill has now become the most important bill, even more important than the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve bill at this point in time. So go to saveourwallets.org. The team there has a list of senators and congresspeople that you can reach out to voice your opinion that you want to make sure, number one, that this language stays in the bill and that they vote for it specifically. And as it pertains to the Genius Act stablecoin bill, I highly recommend anybody who hasn't already go watch Saif Adina Moose's presentation at the Bitcoin conference from a few weeks ago, because I think he has a very contrarian opinion on the efficacy of stablecoins being able to materially support the treasury market.
A good call out.
Yeah.
Definitely on the Save Our Wallets part.
Yeah.
The Genius Act doesn't include that, right?
No, it's the market structure bill includes it.
Yeah, it's two separate things.
Yeah.
I'm seeing Franzap posted a Tom's Hardware link in the Nostr live chat, which you can find at rhr.tv/stream. I saw this headline pop up earlier today, 16 billion accounts exposed in one of the largest data breaches in history. across Apple and Google and some other major tech companies. From what I understand, I think it's a little bit of an alarmist headline. Like, I think there doesn't seem to be evidence that they compromised Apple or Google's like backends. Obviously those passwords are usually salted and hashed and secured in a certain way so that you can't just download all passwords from like a centralized server. I think they compromised individuals and probably mixed together a bunch of different sources to get those passwords. Usually darknet claims it's hard to see what the validity is and how true they are. But in general, for your most important accounts, general best practice is to use different unique passwords. Don't use the same password across multiple accounts. And obviously enable two-factor authentication, ideally not through a phone number or email, which could get hacked itself, but rather through either a physical device like a YubiKey, or personally what I think is the best trade-off balance is using a two-factor authentication app on your phone to generate those codes. And by the way, on that note, Strike this week launched enhanced two-factor options. So they already offered it for logins, but now you can also enable it for other account actions, including sending and withdrawing funds.
Big upgrade. Put 2FA on, freaks. Back up your 2FA. Shout out to A9.
Make sure the backup's secure, because if they have access to the backup, then they have access to your two-factor. Yes. But Marty's absolutely right about backing up, because if you lose it, it's going to be a pain in the ass to get access to your accounts by design. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Shout out to Anon, who's up to 69,000 sats. Nice. Keep up the good alpha, boys. Much love. Much love to you, sir. Or lady.
Love it.
Anonymous lady.
Awesome. Great rip, Marty.
Great rip. Tight rip. We'll be back next week. I'm going to be in DC. So whether or not we record on Thursday or Friday next week is still TBD. So we'll keep you guys posted.
Awesome. Love you, freaks. Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love.